Welcome, y'all!
ATL! Woo! This is the Pregame Engineer Tailgate Mayor Racing Podcast, episode number 118. It's Tuesday, October 24, 2017. I'm Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace, joined back in the PTM Podcast Studio. Pregame Engineer Andrew Shoren. What's up, dude?
What's up, man? We are back in the same location.
Yep.
So we're not having to do that Skypey thing.
Ready to do this thing. We've got an all ATL podcast tonight. It's going to be fun. We've been wanting to have this fella on for a while, and finally got him here. Before we get to that, y'all, the PTM podcast is sponsored by you. That's right. You go to patreon.com/PTM and join the What You Drinking Club for as little as $1 a month and get that free koozie. Best part is every cent in 2017, we're donating to sponsoring drivers. So join the PTM Posse today. Be a part of the sport you love. And this week's show, as always, is brought to you by our official sponsors at the $5 and up per month level. Here we go. Catherine Kingston, Ashley Stang, Harry Balzania, Mark Wiley, Craig Smulders, Mick Rose, Robert Kepner, Tony Saul, Cody McClam, Eric Kepner, Ryan Kiefer, Mary Lambest, Patrick Cleary, Aaron Bearden, Jeff Brown, and Chad Sterling, and Stephen Linden. So thanks,
that's
y'all.
Right, Steve.
Woo! Man, takes forever to get through.
I'm glad you have to do that, not me.
I'm already out of breath. What are we going to do? But we are welcoming a guest on the show. We previewed that a little bit. Tonight's guest, he's the Yahoo Sports Oath Rider covering NFL, NASCAR, golf, Olympics, rowing, tree felling, Scandinavian horse yodeling, or so, you know, whatever. He's the author of Earnhardt Nation, the full throttle saga of NASCAR's first family. You can find him on Twitter at Jay Busby. It is Jay Busby. And Jay, did I get all of the sports right?
You know what? You're the first guy to ever pick up on the Scandinavian horse yodeling, but that is really my favorite sport. I've spent a lifetime chasing these horses, trying to get them to yodel for me, and I'm hoping it's going to happen one of these days.
I love it. So
it's a worthy cause.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It's one of those, you know, B-level sports that folks are. It's up and coming.
It's on the Ocho for those scoring
at
home.
It's what you see when you come home at about 4 a.m. and you turn on ESPN, and that's what the Scandinavian horse yodeling. And there's there's always one guy that's really good at it and two guys that are not so good, but it's a fun watch.
Well, you know, with that, I think it's a perfect segue into what we always do on this podcast. Jay, what you drinking tonight?
Oh, God, I wish that I could tell you something cool. I mean, you know, the race is going to Martinsville this weekend, and so I will say that I will tell you that I'm drinking a Virginia Beer Company beer that they have called Saving Daylight, but the God's honest truth is I'm drinking decaf green tea, guys. So please.
Ooh, decaf green tea.
Yeah, please don't cut me off.
You're getting into like Matt Weaver territory on the
close.
The multi-word drink.
Yeah.
Well, the multi-word.
I'm being a wuss, but if it were the sun were up and it were still daylight, I would have a little bit more punch to my drink.
10-4.
So sure, when I've got from Sweetwater, our friends here at Sweetwater, they have a new one called Triple Tail Tropical India Pale Ale. Not bad.
I've had the Triple Tail. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I like it. It's not overly sweet like a lot of those tropical IPAs are, so I'm happy with it.
Yeah, so you went with the local product, sticking with the ATL theme of the podcast, but because of my continuing series of trying to find beverages from the state that we will race in next, I have the 8-point IPA from Devil's Backbone.
Love it.
Which is a Virginia beer.
And what is
and
this?
And then also for later, when the podcast really gets off the rails, we have the Virginia Black American Whiskey.
I love it. And you said that at the liquor store, dude was like, hey, this is the thing Drake drinks. And you're like, yeah. If Drake's drinking it, I'm good.
I think I shut him up when I said, well, if it's good enough for Drake, it's good enough for me. Because I was like a bearded white dude.
Oh, man. So
I think that we need to, before the podcast is over, before we even get too far, we need to come up with our own brewery. And we could just tell people that we've got our own, you know, three dudes brewing, and we've got, you know, the Dirty Tire IPA.
We'll call it.
You just tell them that it's out there, and you have them go hound liquor stores asking for Dirty Tire IPA.
There it is, and the horse yodeling stout.
You know what's funny about that? It's funny about that is I happen to know somebody who is on the board of directors for a local brewery. We may be able to, if not have our own brewery, brew our own beer,
okay,
and call it the Dirty Tire IPA.
It's in.
Dude, I am all over that. Let me know when that happens.
Okay.
Oh, well, Jay Busby with the All ATL podcast joining us here. We had heard you recently on Gluck's post-race. Wanted to invite you to, you know, come join us for a chat. We appreciate you being here. And, you know, this book that you've got, the Earnhardt book, tell us a little bit about that, what it was like, what kind of access did you get?
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun to write. I mean, tremendous fun. It's Earnhardt Nation. It's the history of the whole Earnhardt family, from Ralph all the way through to Dale Jr., right on up to, well, I can't say today because I put out the paperback. HarperCollins put out the paperback back in February. Obviously, there's been a thing or two that's happened in Dale Jr.'s life since then, but the hardcover was out about a year and a half ago, and so it's all still out there on the shelves. Anything that happened in Dale Sr.'s history and Ralph's history is all in there, and it was just tremendous fun to go back and delve deep into that history. I went to a lot of the old racetracks, places where these two guys used to race. Ralph and Dale Sr. used to race each other, and I walked around on the dirt track that they used to walk on. It's now completely overgrown outside of Charlotte. The Earnhardt family, yeah, obviously they're splintered into several different groups, and they were not as forthcoming as I would have wanted. Certainly that's their right to do that, but they didn't stand in my way. And I got all kinds of other access and information from a lot of friends, family, crew members, crew chiefs, all kind of stuff. So it was just so much fun to write. We all know a lot of the big stories about the Earnhardts. This one is a lot of the small stories behind the scenes, and I think that anybody who's a fan of Senior or Junior will really dig it. There's my sales pitch.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to get my hands on that. And what was maybe one of the most surprising things, whether it's in the book or not, something that people may not know, or something crazy off the wall?
Well, you know, one of my favorite stories was there was a guy named Bud Moore, and this is not the car owner Bud Moore. There's another guy who went by the name Little Bud Moore, and he was a dirt track racer and kind of a small time racer, and he raced with both the Senior and Junior, or with Senior and Ralph at times, and with Junior every now and then too. He was a long time racer guy, but for a while he lived with Senior when Senior was between marriages, and he told me this story. This is the one that I just love so much. He said that every morning at 6:30 in the morning, Senior would wake up. This is around 1980, 1979, something like that. He would wake up at 6:30 in the morning, and Lynyrd Skynyrd's "Give Me Back My Bullets" was his song that was playing to get him out of bed every morning. So, we all know the song. It's a hell of a song. Every time I hear that now, I think about Dale Senior using that as motivation to get up in the morning. And it's just a kick-ass little story.
That song would, I don't know what that would do to me every morning.
I might punch the wall every morning and have this mangled hand by the time I'm done.
Now you know why Senior was the way he was, man. You start your day with that, that'll get you going.
Man. No kidding. So I got lost in a moment there. I don't want to undersell at all the current version of your book, but boy, I sure hope that 20 years from now, you're having to write an addendum because there's yet another Earnhardt who's breaking onto the scene.
No kidding.
Yeah. So that would be pretty cool.
No kidding.
It would be fun. I think the family, obviously they still got folks driving. They've got Jeffrey Earnhardt still in the Cup Series. They got Bobby Dale, Jeffrey's brother, who's making his way up through the Xfinity Series. Man, racing is tough. As we've seen even with the Petties, even if you've got that name and that pedigree, it's tough. But I think that as long as there is racing, there ought to be an Earnhardt running there.
I agree. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, in short of words, yes.
So, Jay, in doing my internet stalking prior to you coming on, we saw you got your own Wikipedia page out there, and I love asking any guest that's got one how that came about. Have you read it? Have you been like, well, that ain't right?
Yeah. I had a fan, a very excited fan, who wanted to write that up, I think, as a school project or something.
Oh, cool.
And I said, yeah, go ahead and do it. And then he did a very good job with it. It was very thorough. And then, of course, sometimes they get a little too thorough and you think, let's not put that information out there. But I don't need, the front of my house or anything like that. Yeah. on the internet. But it's kind of neat to see. And I think I haven't visited it in quite a while, but I think it's accurate. Every so often my kids will stumble across it and they'll say, why do you have a Wikipedia page, Dad? but I think it's fairly accurate as far as I know.
Oh, that's
does
cool.
It still say how damn handsome I am?
Oh, of course it does.
I think that's the billboard.
Yeah, the title. Jay Busby is a damn handsome fella. He also does writing and stuff, but number one, it's right there.
That's
right. Sherwin, with that, I think it's time to start tearing it down and talk about last week. If I have the, one-man show here trying to do all the freaking sound effects.
Yeah, Rusty does all of the soundboard stuff. I just talk. I'm like the color guy, really.
Right.
I'm not very useful here. Rusty's a producer and the play-by-play.
All that stuff. So we went to Kansas. Sherman, you wrote in the show notes, Truex going Truex, despite some self-inflicted wounds there. I mean, amazing, incredible. I don't know. What other superlatives have I can I say about him, Jay?
Yeah, outstanding, unbelievable, relentless, you know, indomitable, however you want to. You can start to get into the old NFL films, Deep Voice Guy, or the unstoppable march of Martin Truex. You know, and
that
it's,
was good.
It's something that we have rarely seen in the playoffs. You know, in the playoffs, you've always mm-hmm. had, like, you remember Tony Stewart a few years back. He goes and wins 5 of the 10 races. But seeing how Truex has just owned it all the way through, you know, I don't want to say that it's over because it's certainly not. All it takes is one bad pit stop at Homestead, but he's certainly set himself up as well as anybody ever has to be in line for that championship.
I think that's the best way to put it, is he's setting himself up for a championship here, and whatever happens, happens, but you got to put all the pieces in place, and I mean, he's piling pieces on. I mean, there's a mountain of pieces over here.
Yeah. I tell you what, I mean, you know, the way that they've done, I didn't mean to step on you there, the way that they've done stage racing all year, it's like they figured out the cheat code before anybody else did. Remember, they were winning those stage races just right off the bat, and piling up points. And everyone else is thinking, you know, I get my one race, I'm in the playoffs. No, man, what Truex has done is shown you that every stage matters, and so NASCAR's got to be happy about that.
Up, down,
yeah,
down,
I think,
left,
yeah. Well, I was going to say, the 78 team clearly has the game genie that nobody else has for a mile and a half. And so one step further on the same topic line is Truex has won 6 mile-and-a-half races, which sets the record for the history of NASCAR. So that tells you kind of where they're at on that type of track, whatever. They're super fast. Well, guess what? There's a mile and a half. There's a mile and a half track in the next 2 segments.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know everybody wanted Larson to get to Homestead because he loves to rim ride, and that's a great track for him, but it's going to be a great track for Truex, too,
mm-hmm.
and so is Texas.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I would love to see what Larson could have done. I still think Kyle Busch has got – I was really glad that for a competitive standpoint, Kyle Busch didn't get bounced out even though he was on the outside the bubble coming in. But, it's a shame that Larson can't be there, but that's how these playoffs shake out.
So, speaking of elimination, Stenhouse, Larson, Kenseth, and McMurray, and I don't know why those were the ones eliminated. I don't know why y'all listen when I talk, because I got everything wrong. I mean, Stenhouse and McMurray were kind of on the outside looking in. We had this bubble going on, and I kept saying I had picked Kenseth to win the race, and I couldn't see a situation where Larson wouldn't be able to get himself a top 5 or a top 8 or top 10 or whatever it took for him to get in. And I said Kenseth and Larson are in, and the effect of that was that Jimmy and Kyle Busch were out. And I'm a complete moron, so I don't know what to say. Sherman?
Well, there's a couple of things at play there. Mostly the big one, actually, I think. The big one, because that mm-hmm. caused so let's talk about Larson. Okay, Larson blew a motor early. We haven't seen – blown motors are becoming a very rare thing for the top teams in Cup, at least. It's just not happening. So the fact that he blew a motor in the first segment was – I mean, that basically told you all you needed to know about him. Some really strange things were going to happen next. Some did, and it didn't seem to matter. Jimmy spins twice, figures out how to gather it up. But that doesn't happen if the big one doesn't happen at a place where you never expect a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kenseth has the crazy rule that, I mean, there was people just spitting fire over that 7th man over the wall, and it was really just kind of an accident. It was like, you had guys going over the wall that know how to fix the car, and then you have the pit guys, and those don't necessarily overlap.
Yeah.
So you might have 11 guys or so running around your pit stall, and you know only 6 of them pit the car. The other 5 guys are the experts on body and other things that you need to do to fix the car to make it fast again. And so one guy jumps over, you see him step back, and he sits on the wall. Guess what? That's still considered being over the wall.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's funny. I say it's funny, but I found it interesting after the race. They were talking, and the crew chief said, "Yeah, man, that's one of those rules. You know, they owned up to it." He said, "That's one of those rules you just don't run into very often, with the way that we're doing stuff, and you know, if you're running well and stuff, you don't really have to worry about this sort of rule." And then it came to bite him.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker for it to end that way. You know, have a rule like that where the guy is just that close, but you know, you see it. You see it in other sports. You know, guy misses a snap. A guy lets a ground ball dribble through his legs. A guy just makes a dumb mental mistake. But yeah, NASCAR is a team sport, even though people don't want to think of it that way. And so it bit Kenseth in a bad way that way. I know he was frustrated. I would hate to see him go out that way. And I'm not sure what the next year is going to hold for him. But man, it would be a true shame if his last run at a championship ended that way.
Sure, when you mentioned the big one, and you wrote in here to talk about the story about the first lap of Carl Edwards' first Cup win.
Oh yeah, I wanted to harken back. So we talk, you know, big ones don't happen anywhere but play races, except when they do. Dover is a place that can get a lot of guys collected, mm-hmm. Or Bristol on a restart can get a lot of guys collected. Our second race we ever went to, Jay, was the spring race that was your third.
Yep.
My second was a spring race at Atlanta in 2005, Carl Edwards' first win. And so, you know, like you used to be able to do on Weaver on the backstretch, we're down there, climbed up on the net.
Mm-hmm.
And something goofy like what happened at Kansas happened, and half the field wrecked halfway down the backstretch.
Bobby Labonte, I remember, was the kind of instigator, yeah. But he was the one who broke loose, well, and then boom, there's 15 cars that don't race anymore this race.
Yeah, the two cars that, you know, probably were going to contend for the win that Carl never had to race that day were Jeff Gordon and Bobby Labonte.
Yeah.
And I really don't care so much about that wreck as much as I want to talk about how we forget about those things when we talk about that fantastic finish with Carl beating Jimmy coming off turn mm-hmm. four running the outside, and how awesome, you know, some of the Atlanta finishes have really been. Is we forget about the little things that happen into a race that really even bring somebody into the competitive scope of the race.
Yep.
And that's how much different racing is from maybe other sports. I guess you could liken it to a significant player getting injured in mm-hmm. in a team sport where everybody's on the field at the same time against each other. Like if a quarterback gets hurt, like in a third quarter or something, the other team comes back and wins. But, you know, it's one of those things in racing that we never ever talk about. It's like, hey, by the way, the two best cars in the field, or what we thought were the two best cars in the field that day, they wrecked on the first lap.
Yeah. Yeah. So what can you say? That's
I just was adding anecdotal discussion and conversation.
The big one at the, and Jay, were you at that race?
I was not, but you know, Carl Edwards, that was his first win. His last race was the exact same thing, where, you know, you didn't quite know how things were going to shake out, and he got collected. It was kind of the reverse of that, where everything went wrong for him at exactly the wrong time when he lost it, when he got taken out at Homestead in that last wreck, and he was dominating the race, looked like he was headed for a championship, and then boom, he's on the sidelines. He's walking back to his car by himself, and that's the one thing that keeps me from rooting too much for Truex. But you're absolutely right in that all it takes is one little incident like that. These cars are so close together. They're the degree between first and say 30th car is just infinitesimal. It starts to drop off a bit once you get to the mm-hmm. back of the field, but there's just such a small degree of difference between these cars that all it takes is one thing, like one little incident like that, and then the best car is out.
Yeah,
agreed.
We got a few questions from the fans, and I love these. You know, this is where we go from the analysis portion of the podcast that so many people do straight into the spit and fire, get fired from your job sort of type of questions. And I really like both of these. Andrew Consian, thank you, Andrew, again for sending in another question. He says, with Kyle Larson being eliminated this round, do you think that this is a credible way to crown a champion? I like how that's kind of like, it starts off kind of mild, and then it goes to 11 right there on the question.
That's right.
Jay, I'll give you first dibs on this one.
Yeah, it's absolutely a credible way to crown a champion. I mean, you know, the idea of crowning a NASCAR champion, you've got to either accept one of two things. You've got to accept the possibility that one car is going to run away with it, and is going to be the season's going to be over with two or three races left, as used to happen in the old days. Or you've got to go and game it a little bit so that there are cars still left in. And I always have a little bit of an issue with people getting upset about the rules being tweaked, because fundamentally this is all a game. This is all a sport. It's all fake. It's all not fake, but in terms of it's all constructed. Everything is constructed. This is the whole. It's not like there was some sacred text handed down from on high that a race had to be 500 miles. I mean, it's just it was set up one way, and now it's set up a different way. I can understand, obviously, that people don't like the randomness, but I think that. As best we can do in terms of what NASCAR can do, I think this series of elimination races is the best way to find a champion that can survive through the entire year-long run. And I think the Truex is proving that this is how you do it, step by step. What you do in February helps pay off in November.
So my answer, dovetails nicely into what the next question will be. I won't get to it yet, but... as far as you know, with Kyle Larson being eliminated, exactly what you said there, especially right there toward the very end, we've got three races, whatever it is, in this round, and to have these rounds, and it's exactly what you just talked about. You got to be good throughout the season, and then you got to be good in these spurts right here. And so I really like this part of it where we can say we're emulating stick and ball left and right and all that, and really, though, I mean, that's what makes stick and ball so popular and so controversial too, everything else. But I am okay with these elimination rounds like this. But we'll get on to my gripe here in a moment with the next question. But as far as that elimination went, I'm perfectly fine with it, even though it made me look like an idiot because I called it the wrong way. So, Sherwin?
It doesn't matter. Like, so what doesn't matter right now is me bitching about what the process is. What I would say to Kyle Larson and his team is, don't blow a motor. You haven't blown a motor all year. Why are you blowing a motor now? Like, let's be meticulous with your parts and your building process. Most likely, as big as that car went up, they probably failed a spring that cost $1.25.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't do that. Bad dog.
Don't do that.
The only time that I would have a problem with it is if a guy gets taken out by no fault of his own. And that happened last year a couple years ago with Kyle Busch at Talladega. And that's why I think it's a good idea to take Talladega out of the elimination race. If it's through no fault of his own, some other driver's mistake that kills your season, that doesn't seem fair to me. But yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, this is Kyle Larson's own car. It's his own team. It's his own construction. It's his own engine. They got nobody to blame but themselves for this one.
Yep, exactly. And I totally agree. You know, if the Falcons and the Patriots are playing the Super Bowl and suddenly the Browns make the Patriots score an extra 12 points, that's a weird, like, how did that work? But that's not the case here. I didn't want to happen here, so I'm fine with
that's actually a really good analogy, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
That's what makes racing so much different.
Yeah. So the next question, like I said, it dovetails nicely. Mick Rose at Go Ducks 42 underscore Mick. If you could change the NASCAR playoffs, and he said the hashtag NASCAR playoffs, so I like that. What changes would you make? Jay, any thoughts on that?
I'm trying to think. I think that they have the at the moment, it seems to be, I like the way that it's done. I mean, maybe not have 16 drivers in, maybe, you know, cut it off at a smaller number, maybe make it, I don't know, what would be a good number, maybe, I don't know, 12 or something, and cut fewer drivers out each round. I don't know. 16 drivers does seem like an awful lot. I understand it's to keep as many people in the fold and in the tent as possible. But, I mean, I got to be honest, you know, I get grief for this, but I'm kind of happy with how this works. I don't have a rooting interest, and granted, if my driver got knocked out by something stupid, then I would probably be screaming to the high heavens. But I kind of like it. I mean, it's the best of a series of unworkable, potentially unworkable situations. There's no way that we want to go back to the olden days of a champion being crowned 3 weeks before the end or drivers winning by three laps. We don't want to go back to that. We want to have this drama. We want to have it. And yeah, it's manufactured, but like I say, it's all manufactured.
So Sherwin, I've got two for me, and one of them I think probably is stealing off of something that I think you've said in the past, which is why do we have to have exactly 16? You know, let's go with winners. It's all winners or something like that. You know, all in on that. You know, let's if there's 12 winners, we have 12 drivers. If there's 24 winners, we have 24 drivers in the chase. if we're going to do that. I think the big one for me though is I still can't buy into the one race win at the end. And like I said, how I'm trying to link this to the last question that we had. Credible way of crowning a champion. I the way that racing works, the any given Sunday piece. I know they talk, you know, that's a NFL term, obviously, or football or whatever. But
hell of a movie.
Yeah, sure is. But I just, there's something about that that maybe I just need more time with. But I wouldn't mind seeing that as a three race championship at the end, as opposed to a one race. One race just, it hurts for me. So, Sherwin?
Okay, so I'll be really quick because I want to get to the strangest thing, and mm-hmm. I want to get Jay out of here. What I would say is I want what you said. I want if you win a race, you're in the playoffs. I want 10 races or 9 races, excuse me, where you get to earn points and stage points, and the 4 best pointers race at Homestead for the finale.
Okay, cool.
Winning a race doesn't mean you're in. Give me the points. I want the 4 best pointers in 9 races racing at Homestead. I don't care if it's 11 or 24, like
yeah,
you said.
Yeah. So,
and then what you do is just to confuse the hell out of people. You know, you stagger it so that racer number 1 only has to race, you know, 120 laps, and racer number 2 has to race
now that's
123 laps. And yeah, just oh god, can you imagine?
I like it. I like it.
Crazy it could get.
At least let's not go back to that. What was it? The All Star race at Charlotte where they're opening an envelope and the guy who's opening it doesn't even know what's going on. Like, what are we doing? How does this work? So, anyway, we're in overtime now with Jay. We got to let him get out of here before he does. Jay, we have a fan of the podcast and team owner for KNN, Ashley J. Stang, and she always sends us an off the wall question, something great, fun to get us out on. She says, and I'm gonna have to. We already talked about how we're sort of PG on this. And there's a lot of language in this one, so I'm going to amend the question a little bit, as I usually do with Ashley's question.
Ishiest.
Yeah. What's the crappiest media center food you've ever had, and where and when was it? Because you know getting crappy food will mess up your day.
Oh, God. Yes, that is so true. I'm not going to name the track because, you know, every track does work hard, but there is one particular track that we all know well, where they reheat a lot of the stuff, and it seems like they may have well brought it down from like the executive suites. So they'll have like little quiches, and it's clear that those quiches were made, you know, days or even weeks ago. Or they'll have chicken fingers that are all stuck together, and it's nasty. There are several media centers. Like I said, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but
sure.
I do, you know, in order to throw out some positive karma, I will say I love the Martinsville hot dogs, yes, even sir. Though you can only have one of those or you're just tempting suicide. and Talladega does every Sunday. I mean, this is reason enough to go to Talladega is they bring in barbecue. This year they had Dreamland. A couple of years ago they had Jim and Nick's. They bring in barbecue for Sunday and you just go and they bring in barbecue, which is good enough. And then every so often they'll have a moonshine sponsor. And I remember, this is God's honest truth, it was Old Smoky Moonshine. And I'm sitting out there in the Alabama sun and I'm knocking back a couple of these moonshines. And then I go to stand up and I realize, Jesus, I've got to cover a race now. And I had way too much moonshine for been on duty. So I had to sit in the media center there and recenter myself. But Talladega is the best. I will not tell you the worst, but we all do know it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, well,
we got Dreamland here in Roswell, and it's damn good.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, all right, Jay, with that, we don't want to take up any more of your time. We appreciate you so much being on the show. And hopefully, you know, we always say our biggest compliment is somebody who would be willing to come on again. So hopefully at some point we'll be able to have you back on the show.
Well, I would love to. And, I'm not too far from that Dreamland myself. So we need to just meet up there and do the show live from there.
That sounds like a plan.
Is a good idea.
Don't tempt us on that one. Jay, tell everybody where they can find you and anything going on.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing all the NASCAR playoffs. I do weekly videos. I shot one today, just kind of a recap and a look ahead over at Yahoo Sports. Best way to find me is on Twitter at JBusbee, JAYBUSBEE. Facebook, same thing. And that's where I post all my stuff. And so love to hear from people. NASCAR fans just kick ass. I cover a lot more NFL than NASCAR, but The NFL fans are a pain in the ass, man. Don't tell them I said that. They're a pain. NASCAR fans kick ass.
Oh, I got a 30-second question for you, Jay, yeah, and then we'll let you go.
No, no, all good.
Has anybody ever told you that you sound like John Reap?
No. Well, I think so. I've gotten that, and I've gotten the guy that created Breaking Bad, Vince Gilligan. I've heard that, apparently, but I've heard that now and then, yeah.
All right. Well, that thing got a Hemi in it.
Exactly.
Love it. Love it. With that, Jay Busby, everybody. Thank you, Jay, for being on the show.
Thanks, boys.
We'll catch you later.
Next time.
Take care. All right. Bye-bye. Oh, man. So, you know, Sherwin,
I guess we got about 5 more minutes than we expected, which is good.
When we have a great guest, and oops, I have not updated the episode number. It says PTM 117. It is PTM.
Oh, my goodness.
There we go. Now everybody should see it. That was embarrassing. it had the right date. I just didn't change the number for some stupid reason.
Stuff will happen.
Anyway, that only really matters once we get down to the car number thing.
True.
When we have such a good guest, I feel like, you know, when you play golf and you play with me and you play like crap, and maybe that goes both ways. I don't know. But but when you go play golf with somebody really good, I'm hitting like in the low 90s, and maybe I'll hit an 80 or 80 something every great once in a while. Like, and it's the same thing here. I feel like with a great guest like Jay right there, we're hitting in the 80s. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, and to use the baseball like analogy for prospects, you know, Jay's an 80 grade guest, and when we have an 80 grade guest, we are like 77 grade podcast host. Like, we're right there.
Right.
Like, it elevates our game.
So much fun talking with Jay, and hopefully he'll come on again, maybe postseason or something, and get a breakdown, and he'll have that beer that he was talking about.
We have to do that on location Dreamland up and on Alpharetta Highway.
I'm opposed to that at all. Sleepover at Sherwin's house after that.
Pull that off. Yeah, I think that's in the cards.
So one thing I forgot to mention, and it's a shame I forgot, but with Truex's win coming on the heels of one of their engineers passing away at the age of like 65.
Not even 55.
55.
Yeah.
Jeff. Was it Jeff?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't remember his
name.
Yeah,
I feel bad.
Yeah,
hats off right there. I got a lump in the old throat there, man.
I did too. You know me. The older I get, the more emotional I get. That's just the way it works. I think I just care about people more than I ever did.
But, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Just caring about people and relating with people and that stuff, and to see that. I mean, I was just I wasn't like an emotional wreck or nothing, but I was definitely like, man, this hits home. This hits hard.
Yeah, it sticks right in there.
Yeah, yeah. So what can you say? A little bit of silly season stuff. You had wrote here. We're gonna have Travis Mack. He was current engineer on Dale Jr.'s team. He's gonna be with Casey Kane's crew chief with Levine Family Racing next year. How about that?
Well, so my first reaction to that was, well, Hendrick really is invested in both Casey's success and Travis's
success. Can we have like a Sherwin called it sort of episode here? Or
I mean,
segment? Because that was a hell of a call with you saying that they are invested right there.
Yeah, I think obviously they've identified Travis Mack as needing to be developed as a crew chief. And he's finished his development as a car engineer,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool for a guy that he's 30. No, wait, I'm thinking of something else, but I'm not sure how old he is. But yeah, I mean, this feels like Hendrick saying, okay, we want a guy that we think is going to be good. We're going to give him to Casey because Casey's a veteran driver, and we're going to give him to Levine Racing, who at this point is buying equipment from RCR, despite the fact that the driver is going to be paid by Hendrick, and the crew chief is likely probably still somewhat getting paid by Hendrick. However, the development process yeah. works for crew chiefs. To me, it just said, okay, they're in. And to me, that says this isn't a 1-year deal with Levine.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect this to be, longer than that.
That's
I would expect
point.
Them to perform
this
well
could
enough
go on.
That they might actually get, an anchor sponsor.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. And where does Levine go from there? I mean, it's what we had talked about. What was it with Tommy Joe about? We need more new teams.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see them, get to two. And we've talked about what the path forward is for anybody that wants to get in. If you can afford to buy a charter and you can afford to put a race car on the track, you're going to get to race. And while the TV model right now, we've poo-pooed a little bit the fact that they stay away from the back half of the field and they give way too much attention to the front. But, I mean, that's just kind of the way advertising works now. Nowadays, it's as aggressive as it's ever been. There's so many people competing in the exact same market that, you know, NASCAR and NBC and Fox have, you know, they have Target. Well, not anymore after this year, but they have FedEx and they have, you know, Lowe's and Doubleman. And I won't go through a whole rundown, but they have all those anchor sponsors. Why did I pick that one up, Kyle? Which is M&M's. How about M&M's, Andrew? Mars. They have all those people in their ear saying, look, here's the deal. We pay this much to be on the racetrack and we perform at this level. We should get the same bias on television coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to argue with that in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's just NASCAR is different than it used to be. You know, the full field rundown is not a thing anymore. You know, and hats off, Brock Beard. You're doing your best work covering the back half. And we appreciate that. And thanks for joining us however many episodes that was ago.
We'll have him back on. We'll have him back on
for sure to talk about that stuff because he's got a lot of knowledge about it. But it's, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, speed equals attention. And I think it looks to me like Rick Hendrick is doing his level best to set Casey up to make speed with Levine Family Racing.
Well, and maybe he gets it too. Or I say gets it, but he's invested not just in Hendrick Motorsports, but invested in the sport. It feels like he's trying to get the sport back where it needs to be, or I say back where, you know, that's rear-facing, forward-facing, get it to where it needs to be with new teams and drivers and stuff.
Well, I think, you know, if you figure that Casey's going to be 38 years old come April of next year.
Don't remind me, because he's only like a couple years older than me.
He's only 1 year older than me, so let's take it easy on that.
Yeah. When he turns 40, we're just not going to talk about it.
Right.
Hey, so Casey Kane, that young driver, he's hot, right? Ladies, isn't he still hot? Come on.
I think now that that part of it's cooling off, now that he's really settled down as Tanner and all that, so yeah. Girls are kind of like,
Well, no, now he's got dad bod. Like, isn't dad bod cool? Isn't that a thing?
Hell, he probably looks better without his shirt off than he ever has.
Probably.
With all the working out he does.
Yeah.
Right, now we're talking about dudes working out.
Right. Looking good, right. So. It's the PETM podcast. I mean, you never know.
Have a drink.
You know what? Jay Busby's going to come back and listen to this and goes, you know what? I don't think I identify with what they're talking about.
Is this
about
what
now.
I signed up for? Yeah,
why are they? What are they doing?
These
guys going off the rails?
Did not warn me that this is where this was going to go.
Let's gas it up.
All right, cool.
There it is. Going to Martinsville. Before we go to Martinsville, I need a bottle opener.
Oh yeah, here you go.
As it turns out, breaking the fourth wall, if there is one on the show here. Yeah, I'm digging into this. Sweetwater 420.
I'm about to sneeze. This isn't going
to get me. Speaking of fourth wall there. Going to Martinsville, you wrote it down. Three names that come to mind: Jimmy, Brad, Denny. Of those three, the thing that really strikes me the most is where Brad had already said that this is a must win for his team. Shame that we didn't get to get Jay's thoughts on that and going to Martinsville and everything. But Sherwin, Jimmy, Brad, Denny, what can you say?
Well, so I was laying down that I had a conversation with several friends who pay halfway attention to NASCAR yesterday at happy hour. And it was like, all right, well, if you think about the next three races, you got Martinsville, and you got Texas, and you got Phoenix. All right, well, Truex is unbeatable at mile and a half, right. So he's going to win Texas.
Yeah.
Jimmy is overall unbeatable at Martinsville, but Brad has shown tremendous prowess there. Mm-hmm. And then, the people I was talking was like, well, you can't forget about Denny. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll include Denny then. We'll have three drivers to talk about Martinsville. Denny really hadn't done a whole lot lately, not compared to what Brad has done lately and what Jimmy has done overall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Denny's got the four wins there. That matters. It does matter. Brad's been the best there lately, and Jimmy is the best all-time other than Richard Petty.
Mm-hmm.
So, you figure that's one of those three guys is going to win this week. You're going to go to Texas. Truex is going to win. Blaney's going to have a shot because he ran so well in spring.
Yep.
Go to Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Harvick.
Harvick. One-man show. I was just thinking.
Has he ever not won at Phoenix when you're like, Harvick has to win this race? Yeah. Like, that's happening.
Yeah.
So really, you have to point your way in. And so I don't think this question was necessarily, or this segment was necessarily designed to go to where I'm fixing to go now. But
take it there.
To look at the most consistent driver in the field that could potentially point his way in without a win. And I'm staring directly at the Napa Auto Parts number 24 and driver Chase Elliott as someone who could finish between third and fifth at all three of those tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And point his way in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a nebulous thought. We're going to have three more weeks to talk about it.
Do you think it's a must-win for Brad?
Yes.
Wow.
I do.
Wow.
I really
that's
do.
That's killer. We talked about it before.
Because he can't win at Phoenix and he can't win at Texas.
But can he place well, you know, win, play, show, whatever. Can he place well enough?
I think Brad's best... his best luck or his best chance to get to Homestead without winning a race himself is for somebody outside of the chase to win one of the next two races.
Interesting.
To open up 2 points positions.
Yeah, yeah. And we talked about it last week with Martinsville being a place where the horsepower is not the biggest factor there. Because you're spinning tires and everything.
Not
so
even horsepower as
now
much.
Now we're talking
as
about grip and aero. Downforce and aero and driver.
It's not about aero at Martinsville as much as it is, do you have your geometry set up correctly? Everybody's going to have enough horsepower to get off the corner at Martinsville, to your point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's normalized. Aero's normalized. Do you have geometry and driver smoothness, for lack of a better word?
Sure.
Ability to get off the throttle, on the brake, off the brake, on the throttle, at all the right catch points to make fast laps at Martinsville.
Yep, yep. That brings us to picks. It's time to pick.
Goodness gracious alive.
I don't even know where you go with this. Where do you start? Sherwin, I was going to have this pick that just blew your mind. Not blew your mind, but like that we were just going to go, holy crap, and then start celebrating and go crazy because of the pick. But you kind of deflated me because I'm picking Chase Elliott, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad you did because I was going to if you hadn't.
Oh, perfect. Honestly. Good. I don't know if I actually deserve to pick it. Cause,
a Kershaw curve.
Yeah, yeah. But I was so excited to throw that out there and everything. And then you'd already talked about Chase, you know, pointing his way in. But I don't know. It just feels like – and again, with the – the horsepower not being a thing, the driver being a lot of it, and the downforce and stuff that we see that Jimmy has, and of course Brad, and you already said Denny, but I think that's it's not even too far from the outside or dark horse. I mean, I think he's got a real shot here, and he what a way to make a name for yourself, as if Chase Elliott has to make a name for himself, but y'all know what I mean. Come on,
you know what? Yeah, we all know what you mean. So I'm going to go a different route, and I'm going to steal – I can't remember who said it on Twitter today. I'm taking it from you, and I'll give you credit later if I can find you. And I think the skill level and the determination to be relevant, especially considering the uncertainty of his role in his current team and how well he ran in the spring, I'm going to pick Kurt Busch.
Wow. Wow, I was going to follow up your pick with the following question. Could a non-chase driver win this race?
Yes.
Yes is the answer that you're picking.
Yes, probably more at Martinsville than any other, in my opinion.
I would agree with going to Texas and Phoenix, especially in this round, and then you know we only got one more race. So, yeah, absolutely. Martinsville would be the one. I don't know if I would have that same yes, emphatic yes answer elsewhere, but... I don't know either. I mean, we've seen it in the past where nobody says that they're gonna you know race lighter for a chase driver or whatever. But I don't know if it happens or if it doesn't happen. But.
We haven't seen it very much. I mean, I'm sure there are going to be two or three more examples that our listeners could point out to us on the old Twitter box when they get a chance. But, I mean, it was a huge, huge deal when Casey won in the Red Bull car at Phoenix in 2011.
I flipped my couch.
Not being in – yeah, well, of course. Not being in the, not being in the chase, because that just regularly doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you throw Talladega out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Chase drivers win chase races.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the reason why they're there. God bless them.
I have so much more fun picking these picks that we just did as opposed to – you know, when you wrote Jimmy, Brad, Denny, I wrote – I thought, well, I can't pick none of them then. That's right. That's not that would just be boring. What would I say?
Oh, it's cheap. It's cheap if you do.
I kind of want to pick Jimmy, because here's the thing with Jimmy. He is sort of same with Chase in a way. Chase has been a little bit more loud in his arrival to this position in the chase. And sorry to overload the term chase here, but we're talking about a person, and I need to say playoffs. Why am I saying?
Yeah, I say did chase. It to you. I led you down the path again.
I've done it.
Just like with Andrew Kansian, I built this black cloud in your mind.
Yeah, yeah. So Chase in the playoffs, but he, I feel like he's been a lot louder because he's been second place, fourth place, you know, whatever. Whereas Jimmy is
running well.
I mean,
Jimmy's spinning out at twice at Kansas.
How about that? By the way, we didn't even talk about that. And I'm sitting there watching the race and going, well, there goes Jimmy. And then the second spin out was, oh, Jimmy, geez, dude, you need to just get off the track. And then suddenly now he's in the chase, in the playoffs. next round. Unbelievable.
Is the nature of on the spot talking.
That's all Jimmy Johnson and Chad Knaus right there. In my opinion, there's so many, and I hate to say it, being a fan, but I don't see Casey Kane being in that situation, or naming, you know, you can name 10 other drivers, but those who could possibly be in that situation and then overcome it, that's a very short list, dude.
Yeah, so I think one of the things I tweeted about, I think I got a lot of people fired up on Sunday on the Twitter.
Oh, super.
Well, some of it was on purpose. Sorry if you're one of those. Definitely was having some fun. But one of the things I said was that is a classic example of how close to the mark Jimmy Johnson is willing to drive his race car.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he doesn't spin out more should give you, like, you should have incredible respect for how willing that he is to approach the line that could end in disaster. And just never does.
And he crossed that line twice, actually.
And he crosses it twice in the same race. Keeps his car out of the wall. That's a skill, too. We don't give a lot of credit for that.
That's good. Kyle Busch has that skill. Jimmy Johnson has that skill. Kurt Busch has that skill. Name somebody else.
Yeah, these guys have learned what the minuscule, the amount of time they had to react. They have learned exactly what to do to keep from hitting hard stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And have a chance to come back and make it to the next round because Kenseth gets his crash clock disqualified.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't think we pay enough attention to that. Those are the minuscule aspects of racing that are so fascinating.
So we didn't want to waste Jay's time with going into this, but it is time. It is episode number 118, car number 18 here.
Driver 18.
Yes, sir. Now, here's the thing. I think of the 18, obviously, in recent memory and then in, like, medium recent memory with Bobby Labonte as, like, a dominant race car overall.
And Dale Jarrett before that.
Right.
That car has been fantastic for almost 30 years.
Here's the thing. Those are the only three guys to have won a race in the 18 car. Isn't that weird?
I'm wondering if Joe Gibbs, being the way he is, so meticulous, so, like, laser eye focused, I wonder if he didn't pick that number for that exact reason. I'm going to make a mark, and I'm going to do it with a number nobody else has ever done it with. I'm making stuff up right now.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I mean, that's what I would want to do.
But that's it. Bobby Labonte, 21 wins over 375 races. Kyle Busch, 344 races with 28 wins. And Dale Jarrett, 2 wins. That's all he had, but 113 races in there.
Yeah, but which were the 2 races that they won?
You'll have to remind me.
I think it's the first race we go to every year.
The Daytona 500.
The Daytona 500.
Yeah. So, I knew that, but I didn't... It didn't register in my mind the 18 for that one. So
you know what? Somebody's going to get on me because I think I said that before, and maybe the second one that Dale won was in the 88. So it might only just be the one. And I'll backtrack on that, but I thought he won two in the 18. So we'll see.
So yeah, that's strange to me. And exactly what you said. Maybe that was a thing that Mr. Gibbs looks at and goes, "Well, let's make this card do something." But who knows, or you know, whatever could happen there. But with all these lower ish numbers, the teen numbers that we've had with all these winners and everything, I found it striking that. You know, not very many winners. Three winners in the number 18. But they also ran the 18 for a very long time. I mean, Bobby Labonte in the 18 forever. Kyle Busch forever. So, you know, then it would just be a handful of drivers from the 80s and before, I guess.
Yeah, so I think Dale got in that car in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And then won the 593, maybe, the years. And that didn't really matter. It was early in the 90s when Joe Gibbs decided, you know what? Football was a lot of fun, but I'd like to go NASCAR racing.
Yes, sir. So, with that, I do have a profile on one driver who drove the 18 for 52 races in 1989 and 1999, or 1989 and 1990. His name is Dick Johnson.
That is a phenomenal name.
I'm going to use his full name the entire time. No pronouns.
Richard Dick is his like pet name.
I don't know. It's Dick Johnson. That's his name. Like that's what he goes by. It's not Dick. It's not like, hey, this is funny or whatever. It is Dick Johnson. He was Dick Johnson was born April 26, 1945. Part owner of the DJR Team Penske V8 Supercar Team. Guess what DJR Australian? Stands for?
Dick Johnson Racing.
Holy cow. He's got to have t-shirts or something.
What's that? What was that Big Johnson t-shirt?
Yeah. Line? Back in the 90s, back when we were in like middle and high school.
Big Johnson
and stuff.
Everything, right?
Yeah, everything was the Big Johnson thing. Yeah. So we're definitely, I need a Dick Johnson Racing Team Penske shirt there.
Buy one, buy two.
Yes, sir. V8 Supercars Hall of Famer. He was announced as one of the Q150 icons of Queensland. Did a lot of racing there over there in the other hemisphere, down in Australia. That was terrible. Deal. Australia.
I can't do it either.
Anyway, he was known for his quotes and his blah, blah, blah. No, he was known for...
That was London.
Yeah. His quotes on his in-car race cam. So he was one of the first people to have like a camera slash... Like he was cammed and mic'd up for the whole race. And he would throw out all these crazy comments and stuff. I wrote a couple of them down. I don't even understand some of them. This one, he said, "This race is like the Irishman who won the Tour de France, I tell you. He had to go on a lap of honor." I don't even know what that means, but when you're talking about Irishman winning the Tour de France.
Which has probably never happened.
Right.
Most likely.
He said at another race, he goes, "This is where I lose so much time. I mean, this part of the track is just so boring." That's a Tony Stewart kind of quote right there, isn't it? Like, yeah. Man, I'm bored now. Yeah, and I just lost some time. This one, I like this one. He's talking about the Winton Racetrack in Australia, and I know Australia is like as big as the U.S. So I'm not sure exactly where in Australia that the Winton Racetrack is, but he said it's like running a marathon around your clothesline.
So Martin,
dizzying,
Martinsville,
crazy. I actually looked up the track. It's a road course, but I mean, it's tight. It's like up there's like a big turn there, and then a big one there, and then it goes down here, and then back up to this way. It's insanity. I can't imagine. So anyway, Dick Johnson,
more Australians named Dick Johnson racing, please.
I love it. I love it. So. With that, I mean, we're starting to close out. Did you see the hat that I'm wearing, Mr. Sherwin? Folks,
I may
might
have.
Start tuning out here in a moment, but when you get
this is the ATL finishing portion.
Man, when you get a new team and something, and then they start doing really well and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I know we tied our last game or whatever it was, but ATL United, this soccer team, has been an absolute blast to watch this entire year. And I don't know, there's no way to talk people to get into it if you're not into it. And I'm saying, hey, watch ATL United. I'm just saying, I just want to be able to, say on the podcast that big supporter, big
we
fun.
Built this city.
That's right. So, it's been a blast to watch.
Yeah.
So.
ATL.
The Viking chant, all that stuff. Here's the crazy part is setting records every match for attendance, setting records every match for TV viewership. Like, this is, we're talking about Premier League numbers on everything ATL United is doing, and I think some people are going, whoa, what do we do? Like, we've got all this money now? People are talking about, like, I mean, the biggest threat for any MLS team is you're going to lose your players. Your best players are going to go to Europe and play over there and get paid buku money.
Yeah, but the really cool thing about the way professional soccer works is they have to transfer money. They have to buy your player.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can get more money.
So you get more money.
Right, right. But, you know, with Arthur Blank, the unofficial mayor of or owner of Atlanta, and everybody, at, like, not just – he's not the type of person who you're, like, mad at. Oh, this guy, this rich guy just owns a city. You're like, yeah, yeah, all right, Arthur
Blank.
Oh,
no, you appreciate his vision. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he has a life that we could only aspire to, but his vision – is impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
His knowledge that soccer was going to be as big as it is as big as it is in Atlanta. His desire to own the team, his desire to grow Atlanta soccer to a desirable place for the World Cup to host a game. All of these things that are going to be happening in very short order, by the way, and the ability to hire people with the foresight to say, we don't need to go buy a bunch of David Beckhams.
Mm-hmm.
We need to buy these kids that are really good that we might lose. The Almirones
and
in Paraguay. We're going to lose him.
And, yeah.
Now, we might lose Parkhurst. I don't know. He may be one guy we can keep. Martinez from Venezuela.
Yep.
We might lose him to Europe. But we're going to get gigantic transfer fees for those two guys.
Yeah. Or we might be sitting on a big enough pile of cash to pay him.
To keep him.
So
at what point does the MLS bubble burst? And, I mean, obviously it's not as popular in the U.S. as it is in Europe and anywhere else.
Sure, and
really,
especially when you don't make the squad.
Well, when you don't make, Ronaldo is what he is. He makes Tom Brady money.
Yeah.
Okay, but he is a one-of-a-kind thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, who's to say we can't have, you know, two or three Brett Favres.
That's right. Team Brett Favres, playing against Team Brett Favres. The universe might explode.
You know, that's a great bit.
Anyway, all right.
Frank Caliendo.
So, Ashley J. Stang, she actually brought us multiple questions this week, one for our guest and one for us.
Yep.
But it is, I mean, it's pretty much the same question, but geared toward us. What's the crappiest track food? And I didn't even put stars around the word, you know, crappiest, like I did for everybody else. So if you got the show notes today, for the $5 and up per month sponsors, that one is uncensored. What's the crappiest, I almost said the word, track food that you've eaten, and where were the worst prices? So, interestingly, I can't think of worse prices.
Well, so I didn't want to tell her that I didn't think this question was going to play very well, because I know we can always turn it into fun, but
number one,
I don't eat a lot of track food.
Right.
The only place I've gone out of my way to make sure I ate something was Martinsville, because of Idiot Sada and the bologna sandwich, or the bologna burger.
Bologna burger, and you got to have a hot dog, too.
And you got to have a hot dog. So yeah. I had a hot dog.
A hot dog is like $2.
All the way,
whatever,
which
like,
is slaw and mustard and chili, and which is fine, because that's the way I like a hot dog, which is not a sandwich. And then I had a bologna burger, which was fine, because I knew what I was getting into.
Right, right. That's the thing. You got to,
they were both like $2.50.
Yeah.
So, like, the price didn't come into play.
You know, on the other end of the spectrum, we talked about it already, but at Eldora, I'm pretty sure with my credit card, I could have bought every piece of food in that entire, like, in the whole deck and just gave it out to everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, there's nothing that I could have.
I had something there that was really good.
I would have had to pay it off over a few months.
I can't remember what it was, but it was delicious.
They got that pizza burger. You know what it was?
Desire.
They had those cheese balls were outrageous.
Oh, yes. Those were good.
Man. I would say, so this isn't track food, and it's not that it tastes horrible. It's that we are horrible people for doing this. And it was Bristol every year. Now that we're kind of camping in different places in Bristol, it's not the same. But we would plan on, and we talked about
pizza.
Fat ass pizza, dude.
That was some not good pizza.
Man, but that pizza sucked, it was... Here's the thing. There's no pizza that sucks at midnight on race night after you've been drinking all day and you come back toward your campsite, and at the front of the campsite, there's a 450-pound man that is selling pizza, like garbage pizza. I'm talking about like gas station, but they don't sell gas. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. Like Hunt Brothers place. Is gourmet stuff oh, compared
yeah.
to them.
Oh, yeah. And we called it Fat Ass Pizza. I couldn't tell you the name of that pizza joint today. There's no way. No. It's Fat Ass Pizza. And he would sell stand out there and sell. And he'd go, pizza, $15. I go, I bet you take 10 for that. And he goes, yeah, give me $10.
Yeah.
And so I paid him 10 bucks. And we started counting on that. We'd be at the grocery store prior to Bristol going, okay, well, what are we going to eat after the race? Well, we'll have Fat Ass Pizza. Oh, okay. So we'll eat Fat Ass Pizza.
Good
so
to go.
The worst slash best food I've had at a track. It's funny how that works, right? It's the absolute, it's objectively the worst food that I've had. But it's subjectively the best food that I've had.
For sure.
Is drunk fat ass pizza.
No, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah, after the race there. So with that, let's close it out, Sherwin. This has been awesome. so much fun. It's the most fun I have every week, hanging out, doing this thing. And Jay Busby, I hope he comes back on. That was amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate his ability to adapt to our off-the-cuff, whimsical process of creating a internet radio show.
I feel like when people come on, at first they're like, all right, what kind of interview is this? And then they go, wait, this isn't an interview at all. I'm just hanging out with my buddy.
Yeah.
Well, y'all know where to find us. It's at PETM Podcast on Twitter, PETMPodcast.com. Sherwin, you've got all the social media stuff written down on here. I'll let you take it over.
Yeah, so PETM Racing Podcast on the Instagram and the Facebook. My personal is Pregame Engineer at for the Twitter, and I had to change my Instagram to at Andrew L. Sherwin. That's my personal. And you got any Instagram action going on, Rusty?
Zero Instagram with Rusty. Actually, I think I have an account out there. I posted like one picture.
I think you do, but yeah. I can't remember.
I don't know. Yeah. But that was like 3 years ago. Anyway, you can follow me at Tailgate Mayor on the old Twitter, and let's have some fun. Like I said, at PETM Podcast. Appreciate y'all being on. Thank you for Patreon supporters and everything. Thank you, Jay Busby. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Yeah, and follow Jay Busby at Jay Busby.